Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're talking about how to improve your credit score. All right, Matt, real quick, I wanted to give people a beer tip because we love to talk about beer on the podcast, right?
Yeah, we normally wait till the end to talk about the beer. But you want to talk about it now?
I do. Well, I want to do a tip. So this struck me as really important, and it's actually really influenced the way I enjoy beers and how good they are because I've done it a different way and they don't taste as good.
Okay.
So when you buy a six pack or whatever, when you buy a beer, sometimes you have the desire to chill it in the freezer real quick so you can drink it that night or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's really important for the beer to avoid bottle shock. And bottle shock can just kind of mess with the taste of a beer. It is to have it in your fridge overnight to let it chill naturally.
Like gradually instead of...
Yeah, like gradually. Suddenly. And then pull it out. Another important tip. So let your beer chill overnight gradually. And then when you pull it out, let your beer warm up for 30 minutes before you pop it open. I think the warmer your beer gets, the more flavors are opened. So if you're drinking like Coors Light, who cares, right?
Drink it cold.
Drink it cold because you don't want those flavors to come out.
Tap the Rockies.
Yeah. But if you're drinking a good beer, you want it to warm up a little bit and those natural flavors are going to come out more. And so I was just thinking about it because our beer today, and we'll get into it in a minute, is Dogfish Head's Oak Aged Vanilla Worldwide Stout. And I was like, okay, I got to pull this out of the fridge.
We definitely need to warm that up.
It needs to warm up because like I'm going to get those extra oak and vanilla notes if it's warmer.
That's true, man. I hadn't thought about that. We do that all the time without really thinking about it, just from having had numerous craft beers in the past decade. But yeah, be sure to do that, folks. That's a good tip.
So there you go. Drink your craft beer and drink it better. Make sure it tastes awesome. And also, I just want to say thank you to all the people that have left ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, man. All the glowing reviews. Thank you, guys.
It's huge for us, man. It's huge for us. And so
it makes me feel good about myself.
We're on episode 10 right now. And if you have been listening since the beginning or have just really gotten in the last few episodes and you're into what we're talking about, it's helpful. I would ask you kindly to please leave us a rating and or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. It's super helpful and just helps other people that love craft beer and money talk find our podcast.
Yeah, Joel, so Atlanta United, we are both big fans and we're recording this a little bit ahead of time. We haven't had our first match against DC United. Oh, Atlanta United, by the way, it's our soccer team, right? It's our Atlanta soccer team. I wanted to talk about jerseys. Like the expensive jerseys.
Yeah.
The reason I ask, I want to bring that up is because I grew up not wearing jerseys. It just wasn't part of like my childhood. I wasn't huge into sports.
You didn't even grow up wearing pants. So
I grew up in the woods naked.
You're one of the woodland people. Like, is that a boy that lives in there? I can't tell. I only see his eyes every once in a while.
They're like feral children. No, but dude, jerseys are so expensive. And I was curious because I was thinking about it. Back when we used to go to the Braves all the time when they're in town, you know, you always had an Atlanta Braves jersey and you would always rag me for not having any of like team gear when we'd go. But I wasn't going to spend the money on, close to like $100 on a nice jersey, you know. And this past Christmas, I scored a sweet, you know, official jersey, which I'm super stoked about. So how do you justify that? You know, you've got something you support and love, your team. But then on the other hand, you've got a crazy expensive jersey, and they change too. That's what's so crazy is that every couple of years, some leagues, they're even required to update their jerseys.
Yeah.
Give me your thoughts.
All right. So here's how I approach stuff like buying a jersey. That is something I typically will not buy for myself because of the expense. And I usually ask for something like a jersey or a hat or something like that for a team that I love and follow for Christmas or for my birthday. Okay. So that's usually
like I did.
Yeah, exactly. I like put it on the list and I know that I want something like that. So, you know, it was my birthday in February and my folks got me one Atlanta United jersey. And then I had some birthday money and I found a sale and I bought another one. So those are the two that I'll need for hopefully the next like three seasons. Cause I don't mind wearing last year's or 2 years ago jersey, but it is nice to have that just to support my team and then to have an alternate one in case I like completely sweated that one out or something.
True. I feel like I can wear an old jersey as almost like a point of pride. Be like, yeah, I'm not going to buy that new one. And as well, we're not super, super cheap. We're not willing to spend money on something that we really love. All right, let's move on to the beer. We're over at my house tonight recording. And
the Palatial Altmix Studios.
We've been over at your place the like past three.
That's true,
Three or four episodes. And I actually have really liked it because it's a nice pick-me-up to bike over to your place in the cool night air. But I've been biking a lot lately, so I'm actually glad to not be on the bike today.
See, I like doing it at your house because when I get bored of looking at your face, I can look at your Great Dane in the corner there and just smile. Stella. Yeah.
She's a good dog.
She's sweet.
But yeah, you brought over a beer, Oak-Aged Vanilla Worldwide Stout.
Yep, from
Dogfish Head.
From Dogfish Head, and they're freaking awesome. And big thanks to my friend Ryan.
Yeah, he hooked you up.
His wife is from Delaware, and so when he goes up there every once in a while, which that's where Dogfish Head is, and he picks up some good beers. And
nice.
So,
man, that is awesome.
Super kind of him to donate these beers to the podcast. And this one weighs in at a super stout, 17.5%.
Yeah, it's like...
So if we start,
I'm excited that we each have our own 12 ounce beer of this. I'm also a little worried by the time we get to the end of the podcast.
I was gonna say, yeah,
we have to pace ourselves a little bit.
If at the end of the podcast we're slurring our words as we deliver our final thoughts,
that is, I mean, that's bigger than a lot of wines, right? I don't drink a ton of wine, but isn't wine like around 15, 16%?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, this is beastly.
You want to crack these open?
Let's crack it.
Mmm.
Gonna be honest, as soon as you crack it, you get like a boozy waft through the air.
It just smells like dark, dark beer.
And if I were to start a rock and roll band, I'd call it Boozy Waft.
Hey, man, you going to the Boozy Waft show tonight?
Yeah, those guys are awesome. They do all Justin Bieber covers, right?
I thought I was the only fan. You know them too. So this pours pitch black. Nice caramel brown head. Oh, man, it smells sweet, too, which makes me very excited.
Yeah, it's dark as night, and I just had my first sip. It's lovely. It's lovely. It's...
Oh, wow.
The oak and the vanilla come through super nicely, and the base stout is just kind of that perfect level. It's not overly viscous, and some of these like bigger stouts, they're like... You almost have to chew them because they're so big and burly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nice body for such a big beer. I was expecting it to be a little soupier.
Yeah, this one slides down nice and really, really beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, look at the carbonation. For such a big stout like this, I'm actually surprised at the amount of carbonation I've got coming up.
Yeah, sometimes these beers like this pour with almost zero head, like no carbonation. And so you're just like literally feels like it looks like motor oil. Yeah,
right?
It looks like motor oil and it kind of has that feel in your mouth too. This one does not. It's got a kind of a nice lively jump.
Dude, I'm really glad you brought this over too because it's been pretty cold lately. We've kind of had a cold streak here late in the spring. And, you know, when it's cold outside, it's nice to have a big kind of warming beer like this because I can already feel it in my belly.
Yeah. Like a stout.
That booze in my belly.
I'm not really feeling stouts in July and August.
No.
But when it's, you know, 35 degrees outside, I'm all about it. Stouts and barley wines are two of my favorite winter style beers. And actually, one of our listeners wrote in and he had some questions about barley wines. So if you have questions about beer styles or you just want to talk more about it, feel free to join our Facebook group or email us. But our Facebook group is the perfect place to ask questions and kind of engage on topics related to beer and money. But barley wines and stouts, two of my favorites to drink during the cold months. So thanks to Ryan for donating these beers to the podcast. Dude, it's awesome. Really appreciate it. And on that note, Matt, let's get into how to improve your credit score.
So the credit score, let's first talk about actually what that is, right?
Yeah. So it's important to note the definitions and a credit score. It feels like this super secretive thing. And for years and years and years, it kind of was secretive.
Yeah.
It was really hard to get your credit score.
Back before the internet, people didn't know what made up a credit score, right?
Yeah, they didn't know what made it up, and they didn't really have access to it, and that's changed over the years. I mean, I even remember 10 years ago, I used to bank with a bank called Washington Mutual that is now defunct.
WaMu. Yeah, I remember them.
And they, one of their perks was, we'll give you access to your credit score, and nobody else was doing that. And I was like super pumped. because I'm a nerd and I wanted to know about it. And so that was really fun for me. You're
like, I want to see my stats.
And fortunately, now we live in an age where you have access to it, and we'll tell you kind of how that works later on and where to go to get that.
Yeah.
But essentially, a credit score is a tool that financial institutions use in order to decide whether they should lend you money or not.
And typically it's referred to as the FICO score, F-I-C-O. There's three main players that you've heard of, and all those kind of play into, they're all weighted and create your FICO score, but Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, the latter of which had a huge data breach last year and stunk it up.
Dirtbags.
Yeah, good job, guys. This episode is brought to you by Equifax. Yeah, and the other thing is, too, is there are a lot of different credit scores out there. There's different algorithms. Different companies have their own sort of proprietary scores. They're all roughly the same. They all typically have fall sort of within the range of like 300 or 350 to up to 850.
And some go up to 900.
Yeah, they're all sort of different, but they all operate around sort of the same principles. And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
And so, yeah, you might get one credit score from one place and one credit score from another place, and they're going to be a little bit different. And you're like, well, what's going on? And it's just because these different credit bureaus have their, like Matt said, their own algorithms, and they are essentially weighting things slightly differently, but there are a ton of principles that you can glean in order to help you understand how your credit score is made up, and therefore how to make your credit score great. So like we said, your credit score is how financial institutions are going to decide whether to lend you money. So good credit score means more favorable interest rates. It means, yes, you're going to get that loan.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why this is important, is because this affects how much you're paying in interest based on the rate that the bank or whatever financial institution you're working with is going to give you.
Back in old school human society, a credit score was essentially knowing somebody and knowing their trustworthiness. And now, because like there's 330 million people in this country, you have to have a score assigned to you, because you walk into your local bank and they don't know, you know, Matt Altmix pays his bills or not. And that's why there's this score assigned to you to kind of let them know, oh, well, Matt's paid all these other bills on time, and he seems to have used it well, his credit well. So you know what? He's trustworthy and we can lend to him. Whereas, you know, before in early human days, it's like, hey, that guy sleeps in really late and he doesn't really contribute to the meals at night. So
you're saying back then I would not have gotten a good loan, but maybe today I would.
Exactly what I'm trying to say.
Jerk.
Why do you need a good credit score?
Yeah, I mean, so essentially, I mean, just like you're saying, it establishes basically your financial reputation, is maybe the best way to kind of describe it. And it's not to be overlooked. I used to be huge into Dave Ramsey maybe about 10 years ago. And he used to call the FICO score the I love debt score. Because his whole thing is obvious, you know, everybody knows, get out of debt.
He's anti-debt.
That's his whole shtick. And I was all about that. I was like, oh, that's cool. I mean, I had a FICO score because I used credit cards since I was a teenager. But I didn't really care about my score until we started applying for loans to buy a house. And then I realized, oh, I'm glad I've got a pretty good credit score, because otherwise that would affect me negatively big time in the kind of loan that we could get. And especially as a self-employed person, we don't have regular income. And so because of that, banks are super nervous when it comes to lending to someone like me. I've got a very variable income and they do not like that. It's very hard to get a loan when you're self-employed. And because of that, having a good credit score is huge.
Yeah, it means even more for you than it does for the average person that can kind of rely a little more on their paycheck history.
Yeah,
they can say, listen, this is how much I have coming in every month, and point to that. And granted, they still need a decent credit score as well. But for you, the credit score means even more.
Yeah, when they're employed by GE, you know, the bank's like, okay, it'll be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, you have normal employment and steady employment for an employer that is going to be around for a while, and that helps a lot. But like you alluded to as well, Matt, this credit score has actually spidered its way into almost every element of life. So essentially, your credit score will affect your loan rate. So you apply for a mortgage, a car loan, anything like that, a credit card.
That makes sense.
Yeah, your rate, that makes sense. It's going to affect that. You know, if you have a credit score of 780, you're going to essentially probably get the best mortgage rate possible, which might be, let's say, 4%. And someone with a much lower credit score, 620, might essentially be paying 4.75, like a huge gap.
Like at half a point or a full point on Sava Prime.
Which could cost you $25,000 over the life of a loan over 30 years. So that's
easily.
That's a huge factor, right? So you want to make sure that your credit score is buttoned up for things like that. Also, renting a home. So if you haven't bought a home, if you're not interested in buying a home and you're a renter, your prospective landlord is probably, likely, should be checking your credit. As we talked about in our investment
property episode.
Investment property basics.
We touched on it then. And even now, though, would you consider renting, though, to renters that have kind of low or like a bad with bad credit?
Yeah, I totally would. If they check out in some of the other ways that I do tenant screening, and eventually we'll do a whole podcast on tenant screening because that's what I want to do. That's
a big thing, too.
Yes. but yeah, essentially I would, but they'd have to meet some other parameters and probably provide a bigger security deposit so that, you know, I'm insured essentially in that way.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, just be ready for that. If you're renting a home, if you have a low credit score, you might essentially be paying a larger security deposit. And some landlords might turn you away altogether just because you have a bad credit score rating.
Yeah. And then I saw, too, how different companies and even employers are taking your credit score into account when it comes to like getting a job, man. I didn't actually even realize this until recently. But employers are literally checking your credit score when in the hiring process, which seems really weird.
In some jobs, it makes sense. Like if you are handling a lot of money or could be, I guess essentially the way it started off was certain employers said, you know what, this person needs to have good credit and good financial standing because they could be subject to blackmail and they're handling company funds. They might be forced into using company funds to cover up for some of their financial indiscretions. And so that was why it started. But it's really breached out into other areas of hiring, and people are having to give their credit scores for jobs that really they shouldn't have to be giving letting their employer know their credit score for.
Yeah, to me that just seems really weird. I totally get it. I guess in some financial institutions, you know, if you're like
working for a major stockbroker or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But what does a credit score have anything to do with, say, like a doctor or like a hospital hiring a doctor or a lot of positions where money just really isn't that important when it comes to how well they can do their job. And honestly, a big reason that they were maybe even able to get that job, they had to, say, finance their student loans and, you know, things like that. And maybe they're a little bit behind and they're not doing the different programs that are offered out there.
Yeah, I think it should be out of bounds.
It's kind of weird.
For most employers and obviously for some employers and some positions, that should be waived. But I agree with you. I think it's kind of messed up that it's that much a part of the hiring process more and more. And another way that we think is kind of messed up that your credit score is used is in setting your insurance rates. And so your insurance premiums are going to be based sometimes in large part based on your credit score.
Are we talking like health insurance, life insurance, car insurance?
Car insurance and home insurance.
Mostly?
Especially, okay. Yeah. And so some studies have shown that someone with a great credit score and a DUI on their record will get a better insurance rate than someone with really poor credit, but no DUI, no bad driving record.
And that's for car insurance.
That's for car insurance.
Yeah, that's seems so backwards, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So that's how far the credit score has gone into our society. It means so much and it goes everywhere. It affects, you know, whether you can get a job and your insurance premiums. And
that's crazy.
Whether you can rent a home and how much you're going to pay on your mortgage if you buy a home. And so it's so far reaching that that's the importance behind having a good credit score.
Yeah, I mean, like it or not, basically, it's becoming something that you need to pay attention to. Even if, say, you buy homes in cash and you're just kind of flush, it's something that you need to consider because it does affect a lot of aspects of your life.
Yeah. If you are like Richard Branson rich, you probably don't need to worry about your credit score, but otherwise, you need to know. And one last thing, randomly, I read this story recently that having bad credit can actually hurt you when it comes to dating. So Matt, we don't have to worry about this because we're married, but if you're out there and you're still flipping through Tinder trying to find a significant other.
Or is there a field like on Tinder where you enter in your age and then after that, like your credit score?
I don't know. I'm happily married, so I haven't been on Tinder yet, but you know, I don't think so. But it was interesting that most people said, because again, you know, we talked about how it's kind of this indicating factor, the credit score, of your trustworthiness. And so people, when they're dating someone else, they were asked the question, you know, would you date someone with an awful credit score? And most people were like, no way. And essentially saying that I don't really trust people that have a terribly low credit score.
Right. It's so crazy. Yeah. What it's saying is that in the same way that businesses and insurance companies are sort of screening people, I mean, I guess folks that are out in the dating pool are doing the same thing.
And that's interesting. I mean, looking back,
it's weird
to that long, long time ago, you know, when we were dating people, if someone had come up to me and, you know, introduced themselves and they seem really nice or whatever, but they were like, my credit score is 500. I probably would have been like, okay, you know, it would have been.
Yeah, you're a total nerd. So
I'm
you
total nerd too. Yeah. But I didn't assume most
people. You knew what that was back then. Whereas I feel like I had an idea of what makes up your credit score and like what it means. But in general, I feel like a lot more has kind of come out recently about your credit score and what it means for you than it did back then.
Yeah, for sure. Like we said at the beginning, I mean, I think in the last 10 years, a lot has changed when it comes to credit scores. There's a lot more transparency and we have easy access to our scores.
The world has changed a lot in the last 10 years, Joel.
Apparently. I was cryogenically frozen, so I missed some of it.
You and Harrison Ford.
Exactly. So yeah, if you are in the dating world, pick up your credit score so you can pick up more of the opposite gender.
So next, we're going to talk about basically how to improve your credit score, how to get a higher credit score, what you can steps you can take that can improve that. And by doing that, we're going to be explaining the makeup of what goes into a credit score. So we're going to talk about the things that the different companies take into account when they're creating your credit score. And we're also going to talk about how to improve those things.
Yep. And the number one thing, and it's weighted averages, essentially, that they factor in. So the number one thing that credit scoring companies are looking at is your payment history.
Yeah.
Of course. Duh. Right.
So what that means is that if you have payments on a credit card or a car loan or student loans even as well, you need to be paying on time or early. That's how you're going to keep these different companies happy. And that's how you're going to make sure your payment history is in the clear.
And this becomes especially bad if you're, you know, a few days late, it's not that big of a deal, or even 30 days late, it might be a small ding. But if you get to 90 days late and get essentially delinquent on a credit card payment or on a bill payment,
that's really bad.
That can really hurt your credit in a big way. And if you have a few of those on there, that can stay on your credit score for 7 years and can really put a hurting on you.
Yeah, you start getting out to 90 days, out to 180 days, 6 months, and different companies will start, they call it a charge-off, and basically they consider your debt or your payment uncollectible because they're like, well, they haven't paid, they're probably not going to pay, and that really, really negatively affects your credit score. And like we said earlier, your payment history, paying on time or paying early, makes up 35% of your credit score, so that is hugely important.
And Matt, essentially the time frame that you need to know that could impact your credit score is the 30-day mark and the 90-day mark. And while some institutions that you have credit through won't report anything until it hits 60 days late, be cognizant that most will at 30 days ding a mark on your credit score. It could drop your score by 110 points, that one mark. And so if you're 30 days late, that could be a big problem. Let's say you're shopping for a house or a car and you're just about to get a loan, and your credit score drops 110 points, that could severely impact, first, whether you can even get the loan, and second, the rate you're going to pay.
Yeah, you may not even qualify for that at all.
Yeah, so your payment history is huge. It's the number one factor. 30 days late is really important to avoid, and 90 days late is the most important to avoid. And like we said, that can stay on your credit report for up to 7 years, so it can hurt you for a long, long time. The further it gets away from being marked up on your credit report,
like a few years later,
yeah, the better you are. It'll lessen, the sting will lessen,
kind of fade.
Yeah, but it will be there and people will see it and it will continue to hurt the actual score. And so you want to make sure you're paying your bills and your debts on time.
So the next piece of the pie, the next biggest factor that goes into your credit score is the amount you owe, or like most oftentimes too, is referred to as your utilization rate.
So this is where your limits come into play. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have a credit card with a $5,000 limit and you are using $4,000 of that limit every month. You're charging $4,000, even if you pay it off
every month
in full, you're still getting dinged because you're using a high level of your available credit. So if you have a $5,000 limit on your card and you are using $500 every month and paying it off in full.
Yeah, that's more like it.
That is going to be the sweet spot and significantly help your credit score because you're only utilizing a small amount of your available credit. And this credit utilization factor is a full 30% of what influences your credit score. So combine the credit utilization with your payment history, that makes up almost 2/3 of your score. So these are the biggest two factors that play into having a high credit score.
You know, you touched on some of the percentages there, but some other percentages too is that, like you said, 500 for 5,000. You said that because that gets us to 10%.
Which is the magical number.
Yeah, that's kind of a key percentage right there. A lot of folks will say 30%, and that's definitely great. That's safe.
Being below 30 is like getting a B on a paper.
Yeah.
Being at 10% or below is like getting an A+.
Yeah, different experts are now saying that essentially the lower you can get it, the better. Because creditors, they want to see that, like, yes, you qualify for that loan or that credit card, but you're not really using it because you don't really need it. Yeah. You're fancy. And essentially, it seems that the lower you can get it, the better. There are no like sort of hard, fast rules because, all these different companies have different formulas and sort of different algorithms that go into creating your credit score. But that is pretty clear that the lower you can keep your credit utilization rate, the better.
Yeah, and they're kind of secretive sometimes about exactly what comprises some of the specifics on these, right? So that FICO's not coming out and saying, and Experian's not coming out and saying, this is exactly the percentage you should stay under to have the maximum score. So some of these things are people know from kind of experience and looking at their own scores and studies that have been done about credit scores and some of the things that the actual credit bureaus have put out themselves as well. We have a really good understanding, but we don't have a perfect understanding that we can say these are the hard and fast rules. But from what we've experienced and seen and read, under 10% credit utilization is going to be the sweet spot for you.
So a tip then, as a way to be able to keep your utilization rate lower, is check in with your credit card and see if you can up your limit. If you kind of find yourself consistently, you know, pushing that 10 and even more so that 30%, see if you can increase your limit. And essentially, you're utilizing less of the credit that you're allowed to use.
And I will say that works a lot of time if you're handling your credit well. But sometimes if you reach out to your credit card company and ask for a higher limit while showing that you haven't handled credit very well in the past, they might get a little worried.
Yeah, it won't look as good.
Yeah.
it will affect your credit temporarily. It's weird because you need to be able to do those things in order to increase your limit. But at the same time, every time you do that, it affects your credit score negatively. I like to think of it almost as like you're opening the fridge or like the freezer. It's like you got to open it and see what's in there. It's sort of like when you're kind of checking your credit score. And it's going to kind of lower the temperature a little bit every time you do that. But like that's what's necessary to get what you need out of the fridge.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
And then long term, you'll be able to kind of build from there.
Yeah. So if you're handling your credit pretty well, it's more than reasonable to reach out to one of your credit card companies and say, hey, I was just wondering if I could get a $5,000 limit increase. And if they grant that to you, that will definitely help your utilization rate. Just make sure that once you get that increase in limit, that doesn't increase your spending.
Yeah, Joe. So those are the first two factors that go into the makeup of your credit score. What's the next one?
The age of credit and the length of your credit history.
So this makes up 15% of your credit score. And essentially, your creditors and the financial institutions, they want to see that you've had a long history of paying your bills.
So you 80-year-olds out there, you better be crushing it on this, okay?
They're swole on their history.
Yeah, they are. And on their shuffleboard.
Yeah, so I mean, this one it's pretty simple, essentially. The longer you've had accounts open where you've paid on time and kind of kept up with it, the better it's going to look. When's the first time you got a credit card? Do you remember when your first credit card was?
Gosh, I want to say it was almost towards the end of college.
Okay.
So, which was probably good for me. I didn't know a whole lot about money. I knew I was cheap, but I didn't really know how to handle money at that point. And so if I'd gotten a credit card, I don't think I would have bought crazy stuff, but I wouldn't have known how to utilize credit well at the age of like 18 or 19. Yeah, I was 20 because when I look at, and we'll talk about later how you can kind of look at some of the details about your credit and some great resources to use. But when I look at one of those resources, Credit Karma, it essentially tells me how long my credit history is, and it's 14 years. So I was 20 years old when I got my first credit card.
Nice, man. Yeah, I remember getting mine, and I think I had just got my driver's license. But there's rules now as far as what credit cards and what different companies are able to offer teenagers. Do you know what those laws are? Because I don't.
Yeah, you're not able to offer people under the age of 18 credit cards anymore. And so the sweet spot for you to get a credit card to sign up, and you know, if we have people listening who are aged 18 to 22 and are in college, that's a time to get credit and use it wisely, start using it wisely. Because once you get out of college, if you don't have any credit history,
it's tough.
It's tough to get a credit card, and it's tough to get started. They're really willing to offer you credit if you're in college as a student, or if you're you're just in that general age range, it's easier. But once you get out of that, it becomes a lot harder to get credit and establish credit, so you're going to want to make sure you start it then.
Yeah, they say, oh, you're 23 or 24. I see you have a job. How come you've never had a credit card? And it's sort of like this sort of catch 22 thing where you need to have credit to get credit, but you should have a job before you start racking up credit card debt.
So if you're in college and you get a credit card, really like buy your gas with the credit card or something and pay that off every month, but don't start willy-nilly using it all over the place.
Yeah, be smart.
And one other really important thing to mention about the age of credit, length of credit history factor is people ask the question all the time, like, should I close this credit card? And the answer is almost always no, because this is an important part of your credit score. And if you close that card, it is essentially you are hurting first your credit utilization rate, mm-hmm. right?
It basically brings down the total amount of credit that you have been offered.
Right. So just
increasing your credit utilization rate.
Yeah. And it also then, if you've had that credit card for a number of years, it takes away from that's been building too,
yeah,
that's
the history.
Been adding to your length of history. So just put it in a drawer somewhere or use it once a year to kind of keep it mildly active. But don't get rid of it altogether, because if you do that, you're going to actually hurt your credit score.
Unless you have a credit card that has an annual fee. So if you've got a $95 annual fee on a card that's just sitting around and you're not using it, please don't keep that around.
Yeah.
It'll definitely ding your credit to close it. But don't be so afraid to close an account that you're going to keep this card sitting around that you're not using, that you're paying every year on because they've got a stupid annual fee. Just because you don't want to hurt your credit.
Yeah,
ding it a little bit, but it'll recover. It'll be fine.
Yeah, and let's say you're not shopping for a car or a mortgage in the next 6 months.
Yes.
Then you can close a card, like with an annual fee. That's when you can do it. If you're in the middle of shopping for something, don't make any changes to your credit.
No big changes.
No big changes. But if you don't have anything that you're shopping for, go ahead, close that card with the annual fee, save the $95 a year. You might, you know, drop 20, 30 points in your credit score, but that will recover over the next 6 months and be back close to normal.
So then the next one, man, is the type of credit that you have, or like basically your credit mix. And so what we mean by that is that creditors want to see that you have a nice sort of portfolio, essentially, of credit that you've been offered.
Creditors want to see that you've got like a mortgage, a car loan, credit cards, student loans, like all these different kinds of credit that you can apply for. And it's just, I know explaining this and thinking through it, it is super weird. They're saying, have all this credit available to you, but don't use very much of it. Have a home equity line and a mortgage and a credit card and blah, 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 but use like an incredibly infinitesimal amount of that credit that is available to you. It's super weird, but this is the way the credit scoring system works.
It's how it's made up.
And you got to play the game. Because you want to
really
get
is like a game, isn't it?
It's like a game. It's like a game, and you want the lowest rates, and so you got to play this game to get it right, so that you're saving the most money.
Yeah. And that being said, this only makes up 10% of your score, so don't get a car loan just because you're thinking like, oh, I want to get my credit score up.
I want to get my credit score. I'm gonna buy this $30,000 car and get a loan.
Yeah. Please do not do that. This is only 10%, so we're kind of getting down to the bottom of the list now, where these things aren't, you know, having nearly as much of an effect on your credit score. It still has an impact, but you know, nothing close to like your payment history or your utilization rate.
But if you do find yourself having, you know, very few lines of credit, you know what? Consider opening up another credit card or two that don't have an annual fee, so that you know you're not going to be angry every year when you get that bill in the mail. And take out those credit lines and just, you know, barely use them and pay them off. And so having those extra lines of credit can help this 10% factor, and then over time can actually go to helping your length of credit history as well. So it can kind of have this like double whammy effect, or triple whammy essentially, because it's helping your credit utilization at the same time. All right, Matt, and the last factor we're getting to the bottom here is hard inquiries for new credit account for 10% of that piece of the pie when it comes to your credit score.
Yeah, basically what we mean by that is shopping for new credit. So whether that means trying to get a loan, new car loan, say maybe a home equity loan, maybe that means kind of applying for a new credit card. These are all hard inquiries on your credit. And what we mean by that is an example of a soft inquiry is you checking your credit score. That's something that will not affect your credit score long term, and you can do that. That's fine. However, applying for new credit is 100% a hard inquiry, and that'll drop your credit temporarily. It's not like a huge thing. Again, we're towards the bottom of the list here, and this is only 10%, but keep that in mind. You don't want to just kind of constantly shop for new credit cards. That being said, in the past, I was looking before preparing for this podcast, and I've got 7 hard inquiries on my...
What you shopping for, man?
So, if you guys don't already know this, I'm a super nerd, and what that means is that I'm constantly working the credit cards, the sign-up bonuses, and...
There's some sick bonuses out there, and you just took advantage of a really great one.
We're going to do an entire episode, I think, on working the credit card system, I think, but... I'm a big fan of doing that. Essentially, every 3 months, I try to get a new credit card with like anywhere between a $300 to $800 sign-up bonus as long as you spend a certain amount within, you know, typically 3 months. So that's why I've got a solid 7 hard inquiries, which is, it kind of surprised me when I saw it, but every one of those, I was like, oh yeah, that's me.
Well, yeah, the last one you signed up for was an $800 bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a business card, which I was able to open through my photography company. But I mean, I used it for photography expenses, and I got that $800.
Yeah. So essentially, watch out when you're applying for credit. Just make sure you're not applying for credit all over the place. But one caveat is that if you're applying for a mortgage or car loan, usually if you're applying within a 2-week period for mortgages, and you're, you know, essentially shopping with a few different lenders, mm-hmm. and same thing if you're buying a car, you're shopping with a few different lenders, your credit union, a bank, trying to get a loan. If it's within that 2-week period, they will count it as one hard inquiry. So don't be worried about that. Make sure you're shopping around for your mortgage or car loans to get the best rate.
Yeah, that's way more important than, you know, feeling like you're, oh, I'm going to ding my credit. Like, who cares? Your credit will recover. It's like constantly, as long as you're paying, you know, paying it off, like doing the big things, it will recover. And what's more important, way more important, I think, is shopping around and making sure you're getting a competitive rate, finding a lender that's not going to really hit you with a ton of ridiculous closing costs.
Yeah. So shop hard, shop around, but do it inside of 2 weeks so that you can limit that exposure to your credit score.
Yeah. So those are the 5 biggest things that weigh into your credit score, right?
Yep. So I'll run them down real quick. Payment history, your credit utilization, your age of credit, length of credit history, types of credit in your credit mix, and hard inquiries for new credit. And we will essentially put that pie chart in the show notes on our website.
Yeah, those are all good things to keep in mind.
Yeah, so you can check it out. It's really, really helpful just to kind of visualize it and think through it when you're considering your credit score and how to make it better.
So we're talking about what makes up, you know, your credit score. Let's actually talk about how you can find your credit score.
Sure. So there's a couple websites that I prefer to use and that I think are really the best out there for keeping track of your credit score, for tools that can kind of help you kind of stay on top of it. My favorite is Discover's tool. Discover, who is a credit card company.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say one of the other ones.
It's awesome, man. I just love that one because it's really simple. It's called creditscorecard.com.
You know, a lot of the other credit cards are doing it now too, like Amex and Capital One.
Yeah. So essentially,
they're all doing it now.
Almost. Yeah. Like I said, 10 years ago, Washington Mutual, it was like this like Lone Ranger giving people their credit scores. And now you can get your credit score from almost any credit card that you have. Mm-hmm. I just like, you know, I'm really weird about how things look and I the simplicity of things, and Discover's website makes it really easy to find out exactly what I want to know.
You like the line graph where it kind of like tracks it across?
I like that. Yeah. And I just like the simplicity of not being like marauded by pop-ups and stuff like that. And so just
nice and clean.
You know what? I put in my information and I see my credit score and I move on.
There's a lot of websites out there too that'll say that they'll give you your credit score for free. 2 that are legitimately free.
are
Credit Sesame and Credit Karma.
Yeah, those are great.
And you've used those. I actually have personally have not used those myself. Yeah,
they're both fantastic sites and they're free.
Yeah.
And essentially they work kind of like Mint does if you use Mint as a budgeting or tracking tool for your money. And they're, you know, occasionally trying to sell you a credit card or trying to get you to refinance your loan into something with, you know, one of their advertisers. But they will give you access to your credit score from two of the bureaus, and they give you a really good idea of the categories in which you're doing well in when it comes to credit and the categories which you're doing poorly. So they might tell you, for instance, hey, you know what? Credit card utilization, you're kind of a yellow on this like green, yellow, red scale. And when it comes to hard inquiries, you're red right now. So they kind of help you understand.
Yeah, they break it down to how it's weighted, which is, yeah, really nice.
Yeah. So these weights that we just told you about, you know, they're actually kind of telling you, here's exactly where you fall under those weights and kind of how you can attack fixing them.
Yeah. So in the show notes, we'll put some links on there as well to some of the websites. There's a lot of, and I say that earlier too, a lot of the websites, they'll give you like a free trial, and if you don't cancel it, you'll start getting charged. And so we'll put the links on there for some of the actual free websites where you can get your credit score and keep up with it. Yeah. So now let's get to a question that a listener posted in our Facebook group. He wrote it all out, and I'm just going to paraphrase it. Essentially, though, what he was saying is that they had some long-term, kind of long-standing credit card debt, and he opened up two or actually three new credit cards that had a 0% interest for like 1 to 2 years. And so they were paying off their old credit card with those, and he was wondering why their credit got dropped pretty significantly when they did that. And this is where he's confused, is because he was thinking, well, we increased the amount of credit that, you know, is offered to us, so therefore our utilization rate hasn't changed. But what he also said was that those new cards, he maxed them out. And I think that's where the problem lies.
Yeah, so something we didn't necessarily tackle earlier on when we talked about credit utilization, there's always been this debate about whether it is overall utilization. So let's say you have five credit cards. Is it 10% of your overall credit cards, or is it 10% of each credit card? So let's say you've got $5,000 on a $5,000 card and nothing on the rest. Well, that $5,000 that you have out against that $5,000 card is actually going to ding your credit in a pretty big way.
Yeah, it's going to negatively affect your utilization rate.
It would be so much better if you had $1,000 out against all five credit cards. So $5,000 spread out evenly against all the cards.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this is something that's kind of, it's just kind of fuzzy, right? Like it's something that's kind of constantly changing. I don't think this used to be the case, but a lot of the experts now are saying that it's not sort of this aggregate amount of credit that you're offered and you need to stay overall underneath 30%, and even, you know, 10% is even better. It seems now that what the experts are saying is that we're looking at per card. And so try not to exceed 10%, but definitely, you know, no more than 30% per card. So if you're maxing out a card, even though your total credit utilization hasn't changed, that's going to hurt your score.
Yeah. And I will say, I actually kind of experienced this recently. I had to buy some things for work and get them reimbursed. And so on this card that I have a $20,000 limit on, I normally charge, you know, probably like $2,000 a month. And
so right at 10%.
Yeah. So right at 10%. And then, I actually had to up it to like almost, I think probably just over $6,000 in a recent month. And my credit score dropped probably like 10 to 13 points, something like that. And so I kind of saw that firsthand. It wasn't even like massive, right? I wasn't using, you know, $19,000 out of the 20, but even just bumping it up, the credit score just adjusted a little bit just based on that. And I was kind of surprised. Those individual credit cards and your credit utilization on each card matters, and you need to pay attention to that.
Yeah. And Reed, we also touched on this earlier too, but every time you have a new inquiry for new credit, basically, so every time you apply for a new credit card, that's a hard inquiry. And that, again, makes up 10% of your total credit score. So every time you opened up one of those, your credit score dropped. And that's something, and with those being hard inquiries, that's something that's going to take, I mean, a while for that to rebound. I mean, probably talking 6 months to a year of, you know, paying again early or on time before you're going to kind of see that creep back up to where you were before.
Yeah, unfortunately, the hard inquiries are only 10% of your credit mix, and they only have the most lasting impact for the first 6 months to a year. And so that won't last forever. And if you can essentially kind of start to spread that money out on your credit card debt between other cards as opposed to maxing out two of them, that'll really dramatically impact the health of your credit score. So consider those two things. And Reed, thanks for the question. All right, Matt, back to the beer. Dogfish Head, oak aged vanilla worldwide stout.
I am loving this, man. This is completely in my wheelhouse.
I'm loving it.
Clearly, Joel's feeling that 17.5%. Woo! So the reason I like it is that it's a big beer. It's 17.5%, but it doesn't drink heavy and thick. As I'm drinking it, it feels pretty light and delicious. It's definitely sweet and kind of has like that caramelly, like molasses, for sure. It just tastes really roasted, dark molasses. Oh, just all the good things that I like. But it doesn't sit heavy. I'm not feeling, you know, all full up with it. So
yeah, sometimes I avoid vanilla beers because vanilla can be just such like an overwhelming component of a beer.
It's totally chill on this.
It's perfectly chill.
Yeah, I love it.
It's got like just the nice vanilla notes. And I'll say too, I really like the balance of how sweet it is. Like it's somewhat sweet with like a nice booziness. So like what you said at the very beginning of the podcast was that it kind of warms you up inside, and it's totally doing that, right? It's got that booziness quality that like warms your innards, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, even though it's March, I'll still call this a winter warmer and enjoy it. This is like the perfect beer for tonight, man. It's 30 degrees outside right now, and I'm happy to be drinking this.
No doubt. So thanks again to Ryan for the beer. And
yeah, thanks, buddy.
To Dogfish Head for taking all the time to make a beer this awesome.
Yeah, Dogfish Head, man, they've been around forever.
They have.
And yeah, they're one of like the old school craft beer guys. Not like Sam Adams old school, but like, you know, a couple years after after Sam Adams, Dogfish Head's been around. They're like one of the first names I feel like I remember seeing out there.
They're one of my favorite of the nationwide American craft breweries. Because, man, like, they make some awesome beers, and I could nerd out right now and go off for like 10 minutes telling you all the beers I love from Dogfish Head, but we're not going to.
Yeah. We got to wrap up.
All right. So essentially, the takeaways you need to know on how to improve your credit score are, first, you need to know what a credit score is, and it's the tool that financial institutions use to decide whether or not to lend you money.
More and more, it's becoming important, so make sure you're kind of paying attention to this. You hear it all the time. It's time for you to look yours up.
Why you need good credit. It influences the rates you're going to pay on mortgages, car loans, credit cards. It influences whether or not you'll be able to rent a home and possibly whether you'll be able to get a job.
So the steps you can take to improve your credit score, there's five main factors, five things that kind of weigh into your credit score. The first and largest one being your payment history. Make sure you're paying on time or early. That's going to have the biggest impact, 35% on the makeup of your credit score.
Your credit utilization, it makes up 30% of your score. And make sure that each card, you're charging less than 30% of the overall available credit every month. And you know what? If you can do even better than that, it's going to help your score even more.
The next thing is the length of your credit history. Especially if you're younger, you're in college, and you don't have a credit card, go ahead and do that now. Know yourself so that you're not going to get yourself into a bunch of credit card debt, but go ahead and get that card. Like Joel said earlier, maybe just start putting your gas on there so you don't have to walk inside of the gas station. Just make that happen at the pump and pay it off every month. Start building up that financial reputation, and you're going to thank yourself down the road.
And if you're 70 years old, do not close a credit card you opened up when you were 20, because that's helping you, right? So also, the types of credit that you're using makes up 10% of your credit score. Make sure you have a wide variety of different credit available to you. Make sure to use it wisely, but have that variety available.
And then lastly, again, this is one of the smaller ones. So the one Joel just mentioned was 10%. This one is also only 10%, but hard inquiries for new credit. Every time you apply for, say, a new credit card or start shopping for a loan, those are going to come in at hard inquiries, and those are going to ding your credit a little more.
The beautiful thing also, there are great tools on the web for you to use to help you understand your credit better and to know your credit score in mere seconds. So we recommend creditscorecard.com, a tool from Discover, Credit Sesame, and Credit Karma. Those are three great websites that won't charge you a dollar, which will help you understand and know your credit score.
We haven't actually talked about our credit scores.
Let's divulge.
Do you want to like share? Are you prepared to kind of dive into that? Do you know yours off the top of your head? Because you probably do. Actually, I had to look mine. I had to look mine up.
Well, I looked mine up today. I'm not so religious about my credit score that I could probably tell you on a day by day basis. But I do tend to look at it, you know, once every 2 months. And I looked it up today in preparation for this podcast on creditscorecard.com. And I will tell you after you reveal yours to me.
All right. So even with my 7 hard inquiries, so don't be like me. Don't apply for 7 new credit cards in the previous 12 months. But I got above 800, man. I was at like,
dude,
like 804 or 805, I think.
Nicely done.
It wasn't like right at 8, but it was like a little bit up there. What you got?
Well, keep working hard, and maybe at some point,
you punk,
you'll get up to the amazing level of 809, like me, sir.
You got like 5 points higher than me.
Yep.
Yeah,
jerk. And I'm gonna hold that over you for a long time. I'm gonna hold it over your head.
Here's the thing, though. As much as we kind of like to joke about that, it's not the end all be all. Some of the best credit cards out there that are offerings for me that I like to go after, which are the sweet sign up bonuses. They are looking for people that have a high credit score, and typically that range starts at 700. And that's what's so crazy is that you can get an amazing card with a sweet, sweet sign-up bonus, easily $500.
Yeah,
if you're around 700 and up, you're golden.
And real quickly, 3 credit score numbers you should keep in mind because they are kind of essentially barriers mm-hmm. and good markers for you: 680. 740 and 770. So 680 kind of like transitions you into like, you know what, this person's pretty trustworthy and good with their credit once you're above that number. 740 is like, man, this person's killing it and they have access to any sort of credit whenever they want. 770 is like you have access to any sort of credit, but also at the most 100% preferred rates. So I've been in the 760s at some times and it's great, but you kind of miss out on some of the slightly better rates if you're going for a home equity line or a mortgage uh-huh. rate.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We really appreciate it. You guys are the best. And the ladies, be sure to check out howtomoney.com. We'll have show notes up there, including some of the sites we talked about in this episode.
And if you like what you hear, let us know. And please review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, because it really helps us spread the love with other people. It's kind of the currency online for podcasts. So
yeah,
if you'll like just toss a 5-star, 4-star, 1-star if you hate us up real quick and let people know.
Don't give us a 1-star.
Don't do it, please. It hurt our feelings. But seriously, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we'll be back next week.
Best friends out.
Best friends out. Thank you.